the meeting. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody want to read the excessive case paragraph?
Okay. In some of the matters before the board, a person may wish to request a contested case hearing. If such a request is made before the board's decision, then the board will consider the request first before considering the merits of the item before it. A person who wants a contested case may also wait until the board decides the issue, then request the contested case after the decision. It is up to you. Any request must be made orally by the end of the meeting and followed up in writing within 10 days. If no request for a contested case is made, the board will make a decision. The department will treat the decision as final and proceed accordingly.
Okay, and the second thing would be item J1 has been withdrawn. So if you're here for J1, you won't be hearing it. Okay, moving right along. We'll go with, we're waiting for Stan Rourke, member Rourke, but then he will be coming in a short, I think. So we'll just go to first under item E1.
Good morning. Good morning, board members. Kirk Cottrell, Division of State Parks Administrator. In deference to the acting chair, I'll make this very brief. So this E1, we're excited to present to you guys. It's to authorize DLNR to directly negotiate a 15-year lease with Storybook Theater of Hawaii. It's an alien missionary organization that does really outstanding arts and education programs down below, but also they're interested in this lot at Pu'ukapele that has been has structures and has been vacant for about 2 years. The previous tenant just didn't have the capacity to bring it up to the infrastructure improvements that are needed. So for the past couple of years, we've been maintaining it. It's been a pretty big burden, you know, to us. One of the things I'm very excited about is that under the terms of the lease, Storybook Theater will do their capital fundraising, and they're going to replace the cesspool with an authorized IWS septic system, which would be a huge capital expense for us. So we're very grateful that in exchange for the nominal rent for their nonprofit, that we're going to get some significant upgrades to the structures and the wastewater system. Both applicants have flown in, so without any further ado, if you don't have any questions for me, I'd like to have them come up and they can explain their programs to you guys.
Question, you know, the annual rent, how are you guys going to reduce it?
Well, it's $2,500 annum, yeah.
And the reduction would be because of the improvements they're putting in? Or?
The rent is based on the offsetting the cost for the improvements they plan to phase in over the next several years.
Okay. Anybody have questions for Kirk, staff? If not, would the applicant like to?
Good morning. My name is David Hamill. I'm the president of the Board of Trustees of Storybook Theater of Hawaii.
My name is Mark Jeffers. I'm the executive director of Storybook Theater and the founder of Storybook Theater. We're a 40-year-old nonprofit tax-exempt corporation. We were founded here in Honolulu, moved to Kauai in 1989. I took a job with Marsha Erickson at Kauai State Park at the Kauai Natural History Museum. I was their program director for a half dozen years. I spent the Hurricane Iniki in the park and lived there for probably 4 or 5 months before the roads were cleared. So I have a fairly intimate knowledge of the park and the people that have made the park. Also, I wanted to say that I did oral history interviews with the old CCC camp members who helped to build the park and the lookouts in the park. And those oral history interviews gave me a deep insight into the beauty of the park, the importance of the park in the state park system, and I look forward to offering the camp as a community arts camp for families and organizations on Kauai and throughout the state of Hawaii as well.
Awesome.
Any questions?
My standard question is that you've had a chance to take a look at the staff recommendations to the board, and
Are you okay with everything that's on there?
We are, yeah.
I think it's great that that an entity or these individuals that have had long experience with the park and its needs are going to be there in a long-term basis.
Any more questions? If not, anybody from the public want to speak on this matter?
Before we continue, though, I've been asked a question asking Kurt about the large capacity, about the capacity of the
cesspool?
Of the cesspool and the system that's designed to replace it, if it can serve up to 24 people per day, or?
Yeah, well, once we decommission the cesspool and, you know, there's some permitting elements, then yeah, we'll be working with the tenant to ensure that the system that's in place will match, you know, the requisite needs of the patrons that come through the program.
That would be good.
Yes.
Yeah. Counting the flushes. Yes.
No, thank you for your comments.
Thank you very much.
Any more questions from the board? No. Correct? Wrong. Yeah, I got a question.
Sure.
Who had a lease on the property?
The Methodist Church.
The Methodist Church?
Yes.
The Methodist Church.
That's right.
They gave it up late 2016. Yeah.
Okay. They made a good run at it, but they didn't have the capacity to maintain and improve.
Is there any... I have another question not related to the cesspool, sorry.
Okay, we're going there.
you are. I mean, it's good that somebody's going there.
Yeah.
Its current capacity how are they going to phase over, or is it going to be, for example, storybook, they're going to be in immediately and use the cesspool until it's phased out, or how is it?
Those are good questions. Well, we're under mandates, you know, throughout the state to shut down, you know, our cesspools. So, you know, this is one of those on our hit list of having to shut it down. It's been vacant for 2 years, so it's been out of use. Alan can, you know, speak a little bit on the phasing of when they come in and how we deploy repair versus running programs.
Yeah, Alan Carpenter, Assistant Administrator at State Parks. So, Sam, to your question, actually there are four buildings on the property. And some of them have appropriate septic systems. Mm-hmm. So there are legal portions of the property. The main historic building, which is the largest, and it serves as kind of a bunkhouse, and it has the kitchen, that one is not. So there are facilities that can be used immediately that comply. One of the homes was built for the pastor, I think, in the 1990s, and it's a more modern structure with a currently compatible legal septic system, independent of the rest. So there are portions of the property that can be used in an environmentally conscious, legal way, and others that have to be upgraded. But that there's that one, you know, large capacity cesspool that is not going to be able to be used legally until they replace it. Okay. If that helps.
Yeah, I'm sure that you were already coordinating with the lessees too.
Yeah,
we are. That.
All right. Any more questions? If not. Could I have a motion?
Move to approve as per staff circumstances.
Second.
It was moved and second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you. Mahalo, you guys.
Thank you.
Moving right along. C1.
Good morning, board members. My name is Jason Misaki. I'm with the Oahu Division of Forestry and Wildlife. Our submittal this morning is to request for delegation of authority to enter into a memorandum of understanding with Hika Alani, a nonprofit cultural group in the Kalua area. The agreement is to maintain a site, a reinterment site referred to as the Evi Kupuna site that was constructed in 2019. The construction of the site was previously approved by the board in October of 2017. This agreement will be put in place to have an official record of a partnership with this group for them to maintain and manage the site in the future. It helps to build capacity and also helps to demonstrate our support of projects like these and groups within the area. We have representatives from the group should there be any questions about the project or about the agreement.
Any questions for staff?
Mine has been all answered ahead of time with colleague.
Okay, would the applicant like to speak?
Yes.
Aloha, board members. My name is Mapuana De Silva, and I belong to Hika'alani and also a group called Kailua Kawa Ho'oilo. Kailua Kawa Ho'oilo is a group of cultural descendants that have ties or live in Kailua that have been taking care of the Iwikupuna issues in Kailua since 2007. And about 10 years ago, the SHPD came to us to ask if we could find a place to reinter Evie that they have been had in storage for a number of years, some of them as many as 10 years prior to that. And because their storage facility, the lease was running out, and they wanted to return the Evie to the different Ahopua they came from. And so as Kailua Kawa Ho'oilo, we took on that responsibility, and finally we were able to find an appropriate site and get off the approval of your board and all the agencies to build the site. And we re-entered on January 6th of 2019 for the last 7 months. My husband Kihei has been, and us and Hika'alani have been caring for the area. Planted native plants, and he goes to water almost every day. There's no water, so he has to take the water in coolers and then use watering cans to walk back and forth. Takes him about an hour and a half to 2 hours.
Yeah. So, at least until the Ho'oilo comes.
Yeah, right. So we've been maintaining that. We just like official permission so that we're legally, you know, okay to be there. And to maintain the place. We realize that DOFA and DLNR don't have the capacity to take care of every single site in our Pai'aina, and we are very happy to come forward as community members and involved in all of this to take care of them for them. We'd like that permission to do that.
Appreciate that, guys, because great stewards.
Thank you.
Kumo, I'm curious about the relationship between like Burial Council and Kailua Kawa Ho'oilo. Do you guys sit on the burial council, or how does that all work?
No, we don't sit on the burial council.
Okay. Quite lucky.
we're still trying to find a representative for the Ko'olaupoko district, an appropriate representative to sit on the burial council. And we don't, Mike Kihei and I are the more vocal members of the group, because we can't sit on the YBC and defend our kupuna, so we're looking for somebody else who has that interest and knowledge who can sit on the YBC. And we think we're going to be able to find somebody this year.
Good. So, and in the meantime, I think it's pretty amazing that this relationship, you know, the Chipti passed that to you guys. Because, you know, Shifty folks will come and go, and, you know, government has a way of losing track of things, whereas the descendants of a place are going to be there. And so it makes perfect sense that you guys would take on the kaumaha of caring for it. So I think of it as there's a growing movement for community collaborative management resources, and I view this as kind of like a resource.
Yes.
So I hadn't even heard of this, you know, and so right. Hearing about it really, really heartens me, because in the marine realm and terrestrial realm and cultural realm, there is more and more of this. So
it's right, good to collaboration, good to yes. See it. Yes. And just as I added, aside. My granddaughter is being raised, helping and knowing about these places, so there is continuity for at least two more generations.
That's the whole point of it, right?
Yes.
Mahalo for your testimony.
Thank you. Any other questions?
All right. Anybody have any more questions?
I have another question for
Jason.
Thank you.
Yeah, for Jason. Would you guys be averse I mentioned that these projects fascinate me and I really like to be kept apprised of these kinds of things. And I think that in the future, the land board, especially when the board members change and they no longer have this continuity with this particular project, would benefit from yearly just brief summaries of the status of the MOU and the activities undertaken in its implementation. I think that would be awesome, and maybe not too much of a burden on the folks who are caring, and you guys to transmit that to us.
Yeah, we can most certainly do that. We'll work with our division administrator to ensure that you get a report yearly.
Yeah, because I'm thinking of adding that as a recommendation, as a condition on the recommendation.
Okay.
It just makes sense.
Yeah, that's easily doable.
Okay, any more questions? Anyone from the public want to speak on this matter?
Not. So I'd like to make a modified a motion that the board accept the staff recommendation with the addition of a condition that roughly reads that the board receive yearly briefings on the MOU and activities undertaken in the course of its implementation. I'll pass that to the secretary.
Thank you.
Well, second. Did anybody second? If not, second.
Okay, so we have a motion and second.
We have a motion and a second.
Amended motion.
Okay, amended motion and a second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Stan, we went to E1 and then we're on C. We just finished C1, so.
We have two notes.
Two.
Aloha, Acting Chair Oi and members of the board. Item F2 is the request for authorization for Papanamokwekia Marine National Monument research permit. This is for Jennifer Sampson of NOAA for access to state waters, and it is for the RAMP expedition. This previously came to the board as included in the submittal under the applicant name for Rusty Brainerd. Our rule is very prescriptive on how the board can issue a permit for the state Northwest Hawaiian Island Marine Refuge, and it includes the applicant and a review of their activities. And so we bring this back to you. Rusty has retired. And so we're back under the applicant of Jennifer Sampson. I do have, so the activities remain the same as previously approved, but I do have one floor amendment, and it comes in the recommendation to E. Over the last week, the Rainier, who is the ship that has come in to help for the Hii Alakai, has been decommissioned. The NOAA folks aboard have relayed to us and that there is an alien invasive species outbreak at Pearl and Hermes. So,
what species?
Unclear. It's a red algae, and so we have contained. They are doing research on site of presence, absence, and also water samples, and also looking at the concentrations of bleach that can actually kill the little fragments. So because of this new development, we are working with protocols, developing new protocols for this expedition and then one other that would be applied. And so it's kind of a simple change because we already do have very high, very detailed protocols that prevent the transport of disease and AIS. So it would be under E. It currently reads to prevent introduction of disease or the unintended transport of live organisms. The permittee must comply with the disease and transport protocol attached to this permit. And then what we'd like to amend it to say, and additional biosecurity measures developed by the MMB for the current AIS outbreak at Perlin Hermes. And we're currently working with NOAA to develop those, so both DAR and NOAA. So other than that adaptive management change, no other changes. And we have Hannah here from NOAA to answer any technical questions you might have about the RAMP expedition.
Okay, anybody have questions?
So with the, is the implication that the red alga was introduced via research activities or?
Unclear, unclear. Could be marine debris, could be, there's a lot of ships that, although ship reporting is a requirement due to, you know, international maritime law and their shipping lanes, there's a lot of ship traffic that we know comes through, so we don't wanna.
Yeah, of course not.
There's a lot of unknowns right now, and we have a running list, so I know you have a lot of expertise too, so happy to share it just as our technical experts come together in the next weeks to get the DNA and then start to answer a lot of the questions that can hopefully have us contain it. Mm-hmm. But
thanks. I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. As soon as you hear about something like that, then all the questions start popping into your head. How did it get there? What is it?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I don't want to subject you to that.
No. No, I mean, it's easy for me to say that I don't have all the answers right now, but hopefully in the coming months, we'll know a bit more. And I know that in this fall, we're hoping to get together before this board and talk about a lot of the activities that have occurred over this summer, and an update on this would definitely be part of it.
Thank you.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, any more questions? Would the applicant like to say anything or? Okay. Any questions for the applicant?
No, I think I would have asked them that, but you know, we're all in a position of not knowing right now. Yeah. And I'll point out that because this is kind of like a technical resubmission because of the name change and everything, that I'm not worried about the details of the permit.
Mm-hmm. Mahalo.
All right. If there's no anybody from the public want to speak on this item? If not,
I move to accept the staff recommendation with the amendment to E that was mentioned.
Second.
Motion was made and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay, thank you.
Mahalo.
D6.
Good morning, board members. D6, we're asking the board to approve the withdrawal of from Department of Ag an abandoned ditch right of way, and to authorize the sale of a remnant to Irene Chung and Etel. Their names are there, various parties, the owners of the two lots that abut the ditch. I don't have anything further on the submittal. Applicants are here. Yeah, I think applicants are here. Yes.
Run that thing.
Applicants are here.
And the applicants have no problem with the staff recommendation. You guys are good.
You agreed for the $2 million purchase.
$2,000 would be. That doesn't sound
like it. I gotta say, he's desperate.
So, Russell, you know that like I was, would this property have the this remnant have to be subdivided?
They own both sides.
They own both sides.
Yeah. They own both sides, right? The ditch goes into, yeah, right into, yeah. So they just got to consolidate.
It goes right to your property.
Okay, got it. Okay, any more questions for staff?
I have no problems with this, Russell, but it raised a question in my mind. When the irrigation system was abandoned, is there any irrigation? Do they have county water to the Wine Mallow? They have public water to, like pipe water to the Wine Mallow farmhouse, don't they?
Well, and Department of Ag has,
they have a
reservoir in, up at, right above one of our parcels that we still hold.
Okay.
That they didn't want to take, even though it's supposed to go over to them. So, but anyway, yeah, so they feed a lot of their, I know they have that, the reservoir water. I don't know if the farmers may be using county water as well.
But so, the, I mean, this ditch. This
but
ditch
I know that when, in Waimanalo area, for the farm guys, they do have, depending on their lot, whether they have access to the Department of Ag water system, yeah, which is, you know, not county, but it's Ag,
right.
Department
okay.
of Ag, yeah. And this particular lot is just doesn't flow, I guess. Yeah.
There's a reservoir.
Can you state your name, please? Oh.
Sorry. My name is Paul Vito.
Should I get come up?
Yeah, you need to come to the mic.
So we can defer it.
Sorry, Chris promised that he wouldn't ask questions.
I couldn't even last the half hour.
Yeah, my name is Paul Ito. I'm one of the applicants for the purchase of the sale. There is a reservoir that was built, and it's a pipe system that goes through most of the farms. Some of them do take the water, but some of them do not because of the nematodes and stuff like that, you know. So a lot of us use bottled water supply water with the backflow and everything we have to put in order to get that approval.
So the ditch doesn't have any water running?
No, the ditch does not have any water. The flumes are all gone. So
it's essentially just a low.
It's just splitting our property in three parts.
Gotcha. So when you have heavy rain, is there water in the ditch?
Oh, no. It does not affect
it.
No, because the flumes are gone. So you have the natural ditches.
Just a swale.
Yeah, it's just a
indentation,
abandoned ditch.
No water, even when
no water at all. Yeah. No, that comes down. No.
Because if they get water when it's really heavy rain, then
well, there's
if
you look at Exhibit B, A, there's a natural ditch in the back.
I see that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's just an agriculture use was.
Okay. Any more questions? In the state go.
Right, in lieu of Oahu, I move to accept staff recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved and second. Moved and second. Okay. Do we have approval?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, D3.
Okay, D3 is a project brought before you by HHFDC. They've been working with the judiciary for this Alder Street.
Thank you for closing the door.
This is, as I was mentioning, the project that HHFDC has been working on with the judiciary, and they have jointly agreed that HHFDC, with their affordable homes powers, a 201H, is going to take the lead to be a developer on this, developing agency on this project. And it calls for the cancellation of the existing executive order, for the set aside or reissuance of a EO to HHFDC, and HFDC will then also issue a lease to the judiciary for certain amount of floors in the ultimately the newly constructed facility, the building or something. And they're going to condominiumize the parcels so there will be a CPR. So they're asking various items here before you as the cancellation of the current executive order reset aside to HHFDC. They're asking you for the right of entry issued to HHFDC to consent for HHFDC to be able to issue its ROEs to others, authorize a CPR of the property, consent to a lease between HHFDC and the selected developer and the judiciary, so two, and also a consent to the mortgage, ultimately. HHFDC staff is here, the executive director and chief planner and are here, as well as, I think, the developer may be here as well, the selected developer.
Any more questions for Russell? Staff?
We have, Russell, you got anybody here from the judiciary? Yeah. I'll wait for her. I get questions for judiciary. I'll ask you a few questions. You're going to have some juveniles going to stay here at this clock. This is a detention area for juvenile offenders. When I was in the legislature, we went down there at least once a year to check out how the facility was operating. So if you're going to keep juveniles there, what are they going to do when you're building everything? You're going to have all this construction going on right next to them, or are they going to move them someplace else? Our docket says some are going to stay there. So this is going to be a great big building. So where are things going to go? They're going to just sniff the dust all day or what?
You want them to?
I'll go ask her.
Good morning. Dee Dee Letts with the Judiciary. There will be temporary relocation of all uses off the site during construction. And then the shelter will come back. Detention services have been off the site since about 2000.
A couple days.
Yeah, the lockdown detention. There will not be any lockdown detention on the site. There is no lockdown detention on the site right now. There is a shelter, short-term shelter for kids that cannot be returned home for reasons of safety while we work with various agencies to find safe placements for them. So that's the use that will be temporarily relocated and then brought back on the site after construction is done.
The facility where they're located on the premises, these kids who have to be there for their own safety, is it going to be affected by all of this, the proximity with this large structure, or is it just going to be the same?
It's going to be the shelter will be the same size with the same number of beds. The judiciary portion of the property will have its own ingress and egress and separate parking. All of our activities will front on Alder Street. The residential side will front on P.E. Coy Street. The reason we entered this agreement is, as you all know, this is a very valuable piece of land with urban services. And to just do juvenile services on it without recognizing the need for affordable housing seemed a waste of space. So that's how the partnership came about.
The facilities at Kapolei are a little bit more modern than what's at this site.
Yeah, Kapolei is very much a lockdown facility. That's where kids go that are accused of very serious crimes, awaiting trial, or waiting waivers to adult court. That is not the type of individual that will be on this site. Those will continue to go to Kapolei.
As I said, we used to go there when I was in the legislature. The Judiciary Committee would go there.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would go to Kaneohe site also to look at the kids. Okay, that's all I got.
Thank you. Anybody else?
A question for us. Anybody have any more questions for the applicant? for Julie Sherry.
I have a question for HHFDC.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good morning, board members. I'm Craig Hirai, the executive director of the Hawaii Housing Finance and Development Corporation. And to my left is Janice Takahashi, the chief planner for HHFDC, who has been working on our end of the transaction since its inception. Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about development costs now. I was just interested that there's a development cost of $89 million and 200 affordable housing units. And I wasn't sure if the $89 million included facilities for the judiciary or if that was all for the affordable housing component of that.
That's cool. Yeah. Okay. So I'm Janice Takahashi, HHFDC. It's for the residential tower. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a high rise.
Yeah.
200 units.
You know, I'm glad you're building the housing. It's just with that works out to 445,000 a unit, which is a lot of money.
And our developer here has put a lot of work into mm-hmm. looking at the cost and the design. So, yes.
Well, I recognize our former board member, Kathy, is involved in this, and I'm sure she's doing the best they can. It's just, you know, I don't know how, at that kind of cost, how many people we're going to be able to put into housing. Mm-hmm. What are the sizes of the units?
Can I ask Elton, do you want to come up and... I'm sorry, I'm not real familiar with the specifics. I'm going to ask mm-hmm. Elton Long.
My name is Elton Wong, work for Kobayashi Group. It's about 600 square feet on average. Mm-hmm. So they're not really large units, but they're good-sized units.
And the land is free.
The land.
The site is... The $89 million is development.
Doesn't include land.
And it has city water.
City water, sewer.
City sewer.
Drainage.
Wow.
Yeah. Electrical, with cable TV and everything.
Mm-hmm. Good. I got a question.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So you guys also mentioned that it's going to be condominiums.
Yes.
How is it going to be done? It's going to be done on the property or on the buildings?
The buildings.
So the property will remain as one lot?
The property will remain as one lot, but they will be leasehold condominiums.
So the judiciary would be one portion of the condominium.
They would have...
The residential or the kind.
Yeah, they're basically two big condominium units. The judiciary condo and the housing condo.
Yeah. Okay. Any more questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
You had a question?
No.
That's the answer.
But since you're up there, I heard the term since its inception, which means that somewhere down in the past, this whole project got started. How long has it been?
About as long as I've been at HHFDC. 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, oh, okay, 4 or 5 years. That's not that bad.
Since 2015, actually.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's
approached
not
that bad. Them in 2014.
Yeah. I was thinking something this complex, right, could have taken like a decade.
The financing is also a big part of it.
We have a good partner.
I guess. Thanks, that was just curious.
HHFDC has a lot of special powers in their 201H.
Deck. Seemed like they have the most power as far as state office agencies.
Is that on the record? No, don't do that.
Okay, do we have a motion? Do we have any just questions for the public on this item?
Hey, in Oahu,
Okay,
awesome.
Good morning, board members. My name is Kath Eno with Kobayashi Group. If I could just make a few comments. We've worked with HHFDC in this project for some time now, and we've taken it to the public with very strong public support. And I think it's a good example of how you can utilize state or city facilities and maximize usage of that property to provide much needed affordable housing. So we thank you for your support. And we are very closely looking at the cost. It's been a very tough situation to handle, but we have worked with a contractor as well as an independent construction estimator to verify all costs, and they verify them independently. So unfortunately, that's what the cost is to construct in Hawaii, but we are still looking to tighten it up.
Yeah, well, thanks for providing that information.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Then in lieu of a O'ahu member, I move to accept staff recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Six. Smith. M1 to 3.
Good morning, Chair. Members, Ross Smith from the Department of Transportation, Airports Division for items M1 through 3. In M1, DOT seeks approval to issue a revocable permit for parking spaces to All Nippon Airways Company Limited at Daniel K. Inouye Honolulu International Airport. Monthly rent for the two approximately 227 square feet spaces is $340. In M2, DOT seeks approval to issue a revocable permit to Jim Jacobs for a T-hanger for storage and maintenance of an aircraft. Monthly rent for the 1,247 square feet T-hanger is $772. Monthly rental includes utilities. And item M3 is at Ellison Onizuka Kona International Airport at Keohane. DOT seeks approval to issue a revocable permit to Hilton Resorts Corporation, DBA Hilton Grand Vacations, to operate to operate marketing and visitor information podiums. Monthly rent will be $30. Okay. Any questions I can answer?
Questions on M1, 2, or 3?
I have one question. Where's the agreement you're going to bring us this session?
I'm sorry. I did. When I was in a little rush this morning, so I didn't bring anything with me other than this. I'm sorry. That is my fault.
Why don't you email it to us?
Okay.
Do you have all our emails?
I could get them.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, you want it to you? Yes. Okay.
Okay. So when will you get it to us?
I'll try to get back. As soon as I get back to the office, I'll go
today.
Grab it up and okay. Send it to you if I can. Yes.
Yeah.
The Hilton, they will be operating just out of just like an information booth.
Yeah, there are two little booths that they have, or actually they're podiums. One would be right outside of the international arrivals, and one is over at a near baggage claim that United has right now.
More questions for Mr. Smith? Any questions from the public? Now, do I have a motion on M1, M2, and M3?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
M4.
Good morning. My name is Olivia Pham, and I'm
sorry.
Yeah. Item M4 is the request for approval to issue a month-to-month permit to Marisco at Barbers Point for the site of their dry dock.
In your opinion, are there any complications or strangeness that you need to report to us on this?
No, they're already existing. We're just updating.
Thanks.
Any more questions? Any questions from any customer for the public?
We're all members of the public.
If not, do I hear a motion?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Russell.
D7.
D7 is a request for issuance of a right of entry to the University of Hawaii Department of Oceanography for the air sea gas exchange and inert dye release study. I believe Dar had some comments, and I think UH responded to those comments. Was those comments, responses adequate?
Please? Yes.
Yeah. Other than that, I don't have anything to add.
It's pretty fascinating. I'm always interested in dye release studies. Learn a lot from what's going on. What do you guys anticipate? I mean, you must be on it. So, what do you folks anticipate learning from this? Yeah, I'm sorry.
Brian Nielsen, Administrator, Division of Aquatic Resources. I guess we're interested to look at circulation patterns in the bay. We have some ongoing questions about larval transport of like sea urchins. We've been outplanting sea urchins in the bay for years and have never seen any natural recruitment. So just getting a better understanding of circulation patterns in the bay is one, just interest of the division, but I'm sure there's going to be all sorts of other answers that come out of this work.
No recruitment, but you've seen spawning activity?
We've seen spawning activity, but no settled baby urchins. So. Yeah.
You know, it triggered something.
Sorry. Dave Golko, Aquatic Biologist, Division of Aquatic Resources. It's been decades since HIMB did original work on the movement of water particles in the bay. That was done back in the 70s and 80s. That time they estimated it took 7 days for a water particle to circulate through Kaneohe Bay, which is extremely slow by most water basins. It has interesting implications for both the evolution and the ecology of the coral reefs in the bay. And along with not seeing a lot of little urchins, we're not seeing a lot of little corals in the bay. And we're not seeing that in a lot of places, but in Kaneohe Bay, which represents an extremely unique habitat for corals, there's three different types of coral reefs in the bay. It's very concerning, and so I think this study may help provide us with some clues as to possible reasons for this and also possible solutions in terms of where we put our limited resources.
Mm. Preliminary, before this study is done, what do you think is happening in the bay?
My own opinion as it relates to corals, I think there's a variety of things. We know that, keep in mind, when those original studies I was talking about, those were back in the 80s. There's been a lot of changes in the bay since the 1980s. Invasive algae, different changes in development population. We know that from the 50s through the 80s, there was a lot of development in Kaneohe. A huge amount of sediment went into the southern part of the bay. That's constantly resuspended, which is preventing a lot of settlement of larvae. But in general, compared to what's happening with coral larvae around the islands, this is my own personal opinion, not a division opinion right now. There's probably chemical effects that are affecting both the successful reproduction of coral, the formation of larvae, and the successful settlement and grow out of larvae in nearshore waters. And this is something that's being seen in many urbanized environments where there's corals, but we are starting to see it here in Hawaii. And getting a better idea of water circulation in the bay, as I said, we have very limited resources. Getting a good idea where's the best place bang for the buck is extremely important, because there's a lot of very, very unique resources in that bay beyond corals, but the corals is the basis.
Good, thanks.
Not to mention that anytime that you have a study that was done in the previous millennium, it's time for a new study.
Yeah.
Any more questions?
No public
hearing. Oh, no.
Then move to approve staff recommendation.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Look forward to seeing what happens.
I guess I'm the only one here.
F1. Oh, yeah, your stuff. Yeah, that's right.
Do you have all this stuff?
F1.
You have a slideshow.
What was that?
They have a slideshow. Did you want to stay and watch?
Yeah.
You can say no. It's okay. We won't be.
Yeah, we won't take minutes.
Not so hungry anyway.
Supposed to be F1.
Thank you. We'll have board members, Brian Nielsen, Administrator, Division of Aquatic Resources, and I'm joined by our biologist, David Gilko. This is a request for approval to enter into a memorandum of agreement between the Board of Land and Natural Resources and the Department of Transportation regarding the new Kapalama Container Terminal Wharf and dredging Honolulu Harbor, Oahu, and the proposed offset measures designed to offset the losses to coral on man-made substrates. If this agenda item sounds familiar, it just came to the board, I believe, 3 months ago, but that was regarding natural substrates. So this one is regarding corals growing on man-made substrates, so pilings and piers that are also going to be moved or destroyed during this construction period. So David Gilko did prepare a presentation for you, and we're happy to proceed with that if there's interest.
Meanwhile, can we listen to Pandora?
While she's putting that up, the chair had asked us to give you guys a very short presentation that outlines, gives you a broader view of what DOT is doing with Kapalama, but also shows you how we're addressing that in terms of mitigating for those impacts. And thank you. Where's the full screen on this?
A slideshow.
Down.
Oh.
The corner.
From the beginning.
Okay. So this is the Kapalama area of Honolulu Harbor. This is where the university used to have their research facility. Here's the Sand Island Bridge to Sand Island. Over here is Pier 41. Sorry. The areas to be impacted range from the bridge to Sand Island all the way to the front side of Pier 41. The areas in orange are to be filled in. The areas in yellow are to be dredged. So there's both filling and dredging occurring at the site. This area, by the way, that the land-based area, it doesn't exist anymore. It's all been cleared out. I don't know when the last time you were down there. They're actually constructing the land portion of it now. They haven't gotten all their permits from the Army Corps yet to do the water portion, but they're close. There were corals that existed all the way along here in both habitats. We've already collected all the corals we can use from that site because at the time the Army Corps was proposing to use a dredge in this area after it came out of dry dock. And so with knowledge that that area would have been heavily impacted by the dredge activities, we went in ahead of time and collected what corals we could use. 82,324 coral colonies remained in this area prior to our collection. That's after Matson. So remember, during Matson, 1.2 million coral colonies died.
That's the molasses spill.
The molasses spill between this bridge and Piers 39 over here, 38 and 39. What remained were documented to be about 82,000 coral colonies. A large percentage of those, only 5 species, by the way. There were originally 12 species known before Matson, the Matson spill. A large number of those species were extremely small. Of those 82,000, I think it's like 90% were less than 10 centimeters, extremely small coral colonies. We also documented a variety of different habitats within this dredge and fill area for both fish and invertebrates, and the remnant reef habitat, which is what Brian was talking about earlier, which we already mitigated for with our other activities. The division proposed a variety of activities that could be done as mitigation to DOT. Today we're just talking about the coral. But the division is doing other activities involving our AIS team and our urchin hatchery to mitigate some of the other losses. And those were already approved by the board at the last session of this. Oops. Okay, so out of those 82,000 corals, we know that 167 coral colonies are larger than 40 centimeters. The reason for that, 40 centimeters is about this big. And that's a pretty big coral. That's something we really want to make sure can stay intact because it provides a lot of ecological services and functions. So DOT is going to transplant those larger colonies within the harbor to the other side of the harbor, and that's a project they're doing with our oversight and input, but they're entailing that. The remaining colonies, we are mitigating for their loss through actions at the coral nursery. We already talked to you with the last submittal regarding the corals occurring on natural substrates. For the for here, I'm combining both of them. One of the things I want to touch base on is this harbor parietes. So we're calling it harbor parietes. We found a coral. It was misidentified by their experts as a native coral. We have strong concerns this is not a native. This actually doesn't even belong in Hawaii. It grows very fast. It produces larvae asexually. We have concerns about it being able to outcompete native corals. So when NOAA first pointed out that they wanted to transplant all 82,000 corals out of the harbor as mitigation, we pretty much said no, both for the invasive species concerns in the harbor outside of this parietes coral, for the parietes coral, and also for concerns about pollutants and heavy metals that exist in the harbor being transplanted outside. We then proposed that through the coral nursery that we've developed, we can mitigate for a lot of that loss. I'm going to show you how that works in a second. But basically, in addition to dealing with those other concerns, we can deal with this concern about this harbor parietes and trying to keep it from getting out. What I want you to notice here is that for these 82,000 corals, which represents both those that occurred on natural substrate and on the man-made substrate is things like pilings and sheet walls. We can replace all the ecological services and functions of those 82,000 colonies by outplanting 352 colonies. And the reason is because out on the reef, they provide a lot more ecological services and functions than they do in the harbor. For example, if I have a coral the size of this table in the harbor, and I have a coral the size of the table out on the reef, it's interacting with waves. It's providing some protection to the shore by interaction with those waves. That's an ecological service and function it does not provide inside of a harbor. And we can translate that to a wide variety of services and functions. And so the division has developed a tool that we use to do that, and we can very accurately show the range of ecological services and functions for Hawaiian corals based on their species, their endemism, their rarity, the habitat they grow on, their size, and their form. And I'll show you that in a second. Here's an example of the tool as applied against the numbers from the harbor. You can see here's the 82,000 coral colonies broken up by size, and you can see the ecological service and functional values that we calculated for each size of those corals summed across all species, and the number of colonies they represent, which add up. So you see the 82,000 coral colonies adds up to about 114,000 in this unit that we call ecological service and characterization value. By growing corals in the coral nursery and outplanting them out onto natural reefs, by taking some of these corals from the harbor and through the process that we do to minimize any concerns about invasive species, pollutants, or heavy metals, we can outplant 352 colonies onto natural reefs and not only meet that characterization value for the lost services and functions, but exceed it. And this is what this chart shows you. Here you can see it broken down by species. I don't expect you guys to know the species. In general, these are encrusting forms, these are massive forms, and this is the native finger coral. So there's three different forms of corals broken up by sizes. And you can see that one of the way we're doing it is we're outplanting them to natural reefs versus in the harbor. But notice, the other way we're doing it is we're putting out much bigger corals than what occurred there. That bigger coral is important because of the size. I'll explain that. Here quickly is basically how we do all this, right? Really quick. First thing is somebody goes out and determines what corals are to be impacted. In this case, DOT hired two different scientific groups to go out, ACOS and Steve Dollar, to characterize the corals that were in the harbor using methods that we approved of for size and form and species. Provide that information to us. We apply our coral ecological characterization tool and figure out how many corals are there, what sizes they are, and what their value is. We then go and figure out how many corals we can grow in a period of time and to what sizes. Using that information and then applying our coral ecological characterization tool, we can figure out a trade-off for what they lost versus what we can gain using our corals. At that point, it's a simple trade for the cost of growing the corals, and that's how DOT came up with how much money they needed to give to the division in order to grow these corals for outplanting, collection, and monitoring. Yes, sir.
Have you done any of this kind of mitigation for Conewe Bay?
Yes, we have, but not in this way. So in Conewe Bay, really quickly, in 2015, we had that big bleaching event that wiped out a lot of coral. We found out about that, and what DAR did is we sent some of our people out around the islands to collect very small fragments off some of the rarest coral colonies in existence. Some of those corals that we got were from Conewe Bay. There's a species there called Parietes duodeni.
So do you have any of those species in the harbor now that you have in Conewe?
No.
No.
But what we did is we collected very small fragments from Conewe Bay in 2015, brought them into the coral nursery, put them into our coral ark, which is our rare species seed bank, so to say. They did so well in there, we were able to frag them, break them up in a method I'm about to show you, and grow them out onto small pyramids. And this last April, just this April, we went and outplanted those back into the original sites. I should mention, after that bleaching in 2015, nobody found that coral again in Conewe Bay. That species was gone. So this was the first known reintroduction of a coral species back into its extirpated environment anywhere in the world. We did it in Conewe Bay in April. So that was a very big success for the division. But this is a very rare endemic coral, native coral. It doesn't occur pretty much anywhere outside of Conewe Bay now. Maybe Olawalu on Maui is the other place it occurs.
So do you have any chemical reactions that you have in Conewe Bay that you feel that it, you think is in your own personal opinion, that's chemicals that's, you know, in the bay? I would think in Kapalama and the harbors would have a lot of that.
Yes.
Because of the...
But different chemicals, but yes, sir.
Different chemicals.
And I'll show you in a second what we're doing to minimize that for everything that we're working with. So really quickly, here you see, this is the it's a native coral, Parietes lobata. It's not endemic, but it's native. Here you see different sized colonies, and that's to get across this idea that the bigger the coral's colony, the more services and functions, but also big colonies are actually able to make it through most events. Small colonies aren't, and that's what's so concerning, getting back to our last discussion, about the lack of little colonies that we're seeing, the lack of settlement. Because these little guys, even if they settle, oftentimes they can't make it. So where the division has gone with our coral nursery is trying to put out as big a coral as we can. And a big reason for that is corals in Hawaii only grow 1 to 2 centimeters a year. If you go to the South Pacific, it's 20 to 25 centimeters a year. So we're growing really, really slow, which means any impact here takes a lot longer to recover.
Why is the difference? Because
colder water and the unique species we have in Hawaii, they're much slower growing.
Could you adapt or bring species from there here that would grow faster to like a reproduction be better?
I would be concerned about bringing in stuff from outside Hawaii. We have 25% endemism in our coral species, which means 25% of our corals are found nowhere else in the world. Some, like Parietes duodeni, are only found in Conewe Bay. They've grown, like with our terrestrial plants, they've grown in an environment very little competition, very little predation. We bring in faster growing weedy species, we're putting our natives at risk, at very high risk. And not just the corals, think of it like the trees in the forest.
Yeah.
All of the fish, all of the invertebrates that make use of those corals.
So, I understand.
So let me explain real quick what we do at the nursery, and specifically in regards to the Kapalama corals. They're evaluated in the field before collection. We look at them for invasive species, health, pollution, etc. If they meet our concerns, they are brought into the nursery where they're cleaned and then put into quarantine. In our quarantine tanks, they're maintained for a minimum of 1 month where they're checked daily by my staff. They're checked for health, they're checked for disease, they're checked for parasites, they're checked for predators. If they make it through quarantine in 1 month, if on day 29 we note a small predator, like a predatory nudibranch, quarantine starts all over again. So we're very, very careful. The other thing we do is we skin the corals, meaning we cut off everything except the living tissue to get rid of any concerns about heavy metals, pollutants, or internal parasites or disease. And those cut pieces are then placed onto these concrete forms where they grow, they fuse, and in a short time we can start off with a 10 centimeter source piece of coral from the harbor. We can grow a 42 centimeter colony in about 8 months, and if you count in the quarantine and the acclimation periods, say a year. Now, to go from 10 centimeters to 25 centimeters in the wild on our natural reefs takes 20 to 25 years. We're doing it in 1 year. So the state is gaining a huge amount of services and functions, which our local fishermen, our local recreational, our tourism can all make use of in 1 year as opposed to waiting 20 to 25 years, which, to be honest, we don't have right now with climate change.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
It may not even pertain to it, but isn't there somewhere in the harbor, maybe it's Pearl Harbor, that they're going to release oysters to filter, to clean up the harbor?
Yeah, they just, the partnership between the Navy and water keepers or river keepers, they just released some oysters last month.
Would any of that could relate to helping your research?
Oysters are great filter feeders.
Right.
But they do... Well, not in the harbor, but in other locations, they could live in the same substrate, so they might be competing for the substrate with corals, but they filter the water amazingly, so it probably is going to clean up Pearl Harbor. I will say that at the coral nursery at Sand Island, we are maintaining the native pearl oysters. They are fully protected by state law, so when we found them at Kapalama, we collected them with the idea of outplanting them in other parts of Honolulu Harbor just to protect a regulated resource. So we are trying to do something with the native pearl oysters, but...
It may not contain those. Yeah.
So in the nursery, here you can see examples of us cutting the corals. The corals, this is called microfragmentation. This is the way we get that growth rate up from 1 to 2 centimeters up to about 8 to 10 centimeters a year. As I said, the corals are glued onto concrete modules which have been cured. They're cured to prevent any leaching from the concrete that could affect the corals. We use human surgical glue. We don't need to do that. We could actually go with a type of regular super glue, but we're trying to keep our standards really high to minimize any potential impacts.
Is Gorilla Glue?
No. Gorilla Glue actually has a chemical in it, which really nasty. Once the coral microfrags are glued on, they're placed in these very specialized aquarias where they'll sit for about 8 months, and it's in here that we can grow from 10 centimeters to 42 centimeters in a year versus 20 to 25 years in the wild.
That has a real high-tech look.
It's very high-tech. We would love, when appropriate, for any member of the board that would like to come down and see this in person, we can arrange that. This is the second generation tank that we developed. These are our new tanks. These just started, and you can see we've filled them up with modules. This is allowing us to increase our output from 80 colonies a year to 220 colonies a year.
Looks like science fiction.
We right now are the only place in the world doing this. There's Australia and some other places that are very interested in it because we're focusing on fast-growing big corals.
If you don't mind, maybe you can email Darlene. I'd like to get a hold of you, and I'd like to come and take a look.
By all means. Okay. By all means.
We're near the airport, too, so just hit us on the way back.
We can't just take corals. We can't just take corals. This is like living in a 5-star hotel, all right? They're getting room service every day. They get fed. They're getting their linens changed.
Tanning booth.
The whole bit. It's 5-star. It would be like you going from a 5-star hotel in Waikiki to me making you homeless on the street in Kalihi. So we can't take it directly and put it back in the ocean because conditions in our oceans aren't that great. So what we do is we reacclimate them back to ocean conditions. This takes about a month, sometimes a little longer. We change the lighting to start to get them used to regular sunlight at the depths
they're going
to
be. Well,
we actually have these specialized tanks, and here you can see one that's fully fused. They go into the tank, and in the tank, they'll sit there for a month, and they'll be slowly reacclimated. We can add some sediment. We add wave pulses. We can modify the light, we can modify the water quality to get them used to the exact conditions they're being put out into. And then from there, we put them out onto the environment. And 2 years ago, we came to the board and got approval for a test site off Sand Island. I'm going to show you some of those results right now. Wow. Here's a colony. This is 42 centimeters that we put out. This is the first month. This is 9 months later. Wow. And what I want you to notice, you can see, remember, as soon as it goes out of that special room, it's back down to 1 to 2 centimeters a year. So you don't see a lot of growth. You can see a little bit along the edge, and you can see that it started to bump out. It started to look more like a normal colony versus a pyramid. Mm-hmm. Here's one inside our tank, and here's that same colony once we put it out onto the reef, once we reacclimated it. Here you can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of our modules, 1, 2, 3, 4 different species. Look at, you can see accretion, meaning it's grown, it's doing well. Look at the colors. You can see really good color in this coral compared to natural living corals adjacent to it. They're doing really, really well. In fact, we have not seen any loss of tissue in over 2.5 years on the corals we put out, and that's amazing given
the
conditions.
Does the fish population come back to the reef fish?
We're just starting to look at that. We that wasn't one of the original things we were looking at. We wanted to make sure the corals were alive, but now that they're doing so well, we're going to follow with the next ones we put out, changes in reef, both biodiversity and biomass.
Do you anchor these to the bottom?
Yes, they are glued on with a type of glue called Splash. It's a two-part marine epoxy, and even that, we were very careful about what we used. Maui Ocean Center's been using it for 20 years, and it actually has had their corals that they use that on reproduce. So we've pretty confident it's not causing chemical effects or really noticeable chemical effects to the corals. Here you see another one, and once again, 1, 2, 3, 4 of our modules. Once again, if you compare them to surrounding corals, you can see how healthy they look, in both in terms of color and shape. And then this was one, this was taken in April of this year. Look at this module. You can't even tell it's a module anymore. It's really formed the natural shape of the coral, but also look how healthy it is. You can see the polyps are out. These polyps are the little individual coral animals. That's why it looks fuzzy. And that color is indicative of a very healthy coral. So we're very confident that what we're doing is a very big success in terms of restoring native Hawaiian corals. But we ran into a problem. And the problem we ran into is about 42 centimeters, as big as we could go and safely put these things out, because of the weight of the concrete, moving it around, and the constraints of the systems we have down at AFRC. But we want to go bigger, because the bigger corals provide a lot more services. We want to go up to 1 meter. We realize it's too big for a diver to manipulate in the water, so we came up with this idea of breaking it into 4 sections. In other words, we took this pyramid, we cut it into 4 equal sections, we grow coral all over it, and we'll put it together in the water. And that would look something like this. We'll have 4 fully grown sections, and we'll glue it together. So the only thing that has to fuse are these thin lines here, and that'll only take about a week, and we'll have a 1 meter by 70 centimeter coral colony. Now, to grow a coral from about 20 centimeters of source material to 1 meter naturally in Hawaii at 1 to 2 centimeters a year would take 100 to 150 years. We're planning to do it in 1 year, which is amazing.
Whoa.
In fact, we're doing it. We're actually, these are the corals we're growing. Here you can see 2 different species growing on these 1 meter modules. Here's a close-up. Look at how healthy those are. They're fusing. They have got really good color. This is a huge success. And those 1 meter corals are worth a lot. A coral that size is worth, and I'm making this up, so don't hold me to it, maybe 1,000 small corals is 1 1-meter coral. I mean, it's that big of a difference in terms of surface. Think of the difference between 1 large koa tree and a bunch of small bushes.
Right.
In terms of all the fish that can make use of it, all the insects, all the epiphytes, etc. That's the same with these big coral colonies, and that's what we're doing. So really quickly to finish up, the coral nursery's been a big success. We've created, without any funding actually, a rare species ark. We currently have 52 species, native Hawaiian species, at the coral nursery. There's only 62 species in all the main Hawaiian islands. And we've got 52 of them that we are maintaining in our coral arc. We're actively growing out 12 species for outplanting to restore reefs right now. We've started up a larval program. We're going to start looking at crustose coral and algae as the other major component of reefs. And just finally to finish up, give you an idea of what the problems we're facing. Right now, our traditional responses on reefs is tighten regulations, more MPAs, and increase conservation education. That traditionally has been the role of the division over the last 20 years or so. We're starting to change that with some new things, because on our reefs, we can break down impacts into both planned and unplanned impacts within our waters, localized impacts, meaning those between sites, and then global and regional impacts. These are the tools we've developed recently that the division, our AIS team doing direct AIS interventions, good example being the tilapia on Kauai you may have read about recently, our new coral restoration nursery, our mitigation bank, and our services and function tools. That gives us a pretty good set of defenses against both planned and unplanned impacts. But when we start talking about the global and regional impacts, even these aren't going to work. We need to start thinking outside that box. And the next secondary line of defense, which we'd like to start moving into, we've done it with one of them, which is this coral arc to preserve our unique endemism. But some of these other things which can allow us tools to interface with not changing global warming, but trying to mitigate it at very small scales on our localized nearshore reefs. And with that,
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
Are there any kind, have you observed that there are any varieties of Hawaii corals that do better with global warming than others? Maybe we should focus on the ones that are going to do better in the years to come as opposed to all of them, where you might have less success.
There is a research group, you may have heard of Ruth Gates, she passed away recently. Her lab at HIMB has been trying to develop what they call super corals. There's concerns about that, to be quite honest. Same concerns you'd have for trying to pick winners and losers in a native Hawaiian forest. And it's not just the loss of other corals, it's all the fish and invertebrates and algae that are uniquely tied to those species of coral. So do we want to have that tool in our pocket? Yes. Do we want to use it now? No. We have such high endemism, we're so unique, what makes Hawaii special is at risk if we pick a winner right now over all the natives. However, developing that tool is probably critically important if things get really, really bad in the future, to have that available as a last choice method.
I'd just add too, we're also kind of inadvertently doing that. We've gone through two coral bleaching events where we lost a lot of coral statewide. We're heading into, it looks like, a third one this summer. And so we are using the survivors of those last two events that are feeding this nursery. So we're kind of selecting the corals that have made it through those other events. And I think inadvertently we're going to be doing that more and more in the future.
And for the species that are coming from the harbor, and once again, inadvertently, they are already survivors because those environments are very harsh compared to most reefs. And those are the ones we're using to grow. Because if I take a coral from a native reef, I have that impact on the native reef at 1 to 2 centimeters. Now, we have a way around that, but we try to use the ones in the harbor first if those species will work. But we have to be extremely careful about not moving anything else with them.
I noticed in the Big Island that we swim in different places. And East Hawaii, the water's a lot more cloudy. I don't know whether that relates to anything to do with the coral or what. And West Hawaii is a lot clearer.
Well, there's a big difference between reefs on the east and west side of the Big Island. Not the least of which is on the west side, there's a lot of freshwater intrusion subsurface onto the reefs, whereas on the east side it's coming more on the surface. You also have at least during certain times of year, more wave action on the east than the west. Just like we see differences on this island between, outside of Kaneohe Bay, between our eastern side reefs, which are exposed to far greater wave action than our western side reefs. There's also upwelling that occurs on the western side, at least in the Kailua Kona area, that is probably having a dramatic effect on water quality in those areas. I mean, there could be a half a dozen other reasons, but that's just right off the top of my head.
Thank you.
On Maui, on the Rahihi Kino, okay?
Very familiar with it.
2530, you're familiar with it. You know the green shack right across the road?
Yeah, the Doak Air one?
No.
Oh.
The other one. There's two greenhouses right next to the road.
Okay.
Right on the bay.
Yep.
I got one of them.
Okay.
So now,
you've seen some changes.
Huge.
Yeah.
Huge. 25 years ago, you go in there, it's like an aquarium.
Yep.
But you know what I see screws up? Is the tourists.
Yep.
They're breaking the coral down. In fact, the water even smells with suntan lotion. What a shame. What a shame. But I see the difference in the coral.
And
my kids grew up in that water, you know, and you looked at it today. I don't even go in the water anymore.
So there's two other areas at Ahi Canal that I won't mention that are extremely unique and pristine.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And a number of years ago,
right.
I was involved with helping to get those closed down because of overuse and inappropriate use
and
effects on archaeological and traditional Hawaiian sites being inappropriately used. I did recently, I notified DOCARE, DOCARE and DOFA, I was going to be going in to check on one of those two sites. It's still doing pretty good.
Yeah, from what I heard.
Yeah, but that is a treasure, and even that bay has some unique corals in it.
It does.
That little Ohi'i Cove has some pretty unique stuff in it. I can't speak for the division, but I would be happy to help in any way I can.
Anymore.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing to eat.
Well, without getting into it, I informed DOFA that my last trip out there, I noted that there's still poachers going out there because there's fresh. They put marks on the rock that you only see when you're going back to the road, so they can find their way back at night with their headlamps, and there were fresh marks. So there's still poachers going into those closed areas.
Poaching what?
Probably opihi and fish. Certainly opihi, but probably also fish. There's some huge schools of fish in some of these areas.
We have that all over the Big Island.
Yeah.
We have, where I live, Hilo. Everybody blames somebody else for doing it, but whoever it is, they come really like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they go out with inner tubes, take everything.
Well, Ahi Canal actually has some of the most stringent protections on it of anywhere in the main Hawaiian Islands. There's boating is restricted, commercial activities are restricted. It's fenced in. I mean, if anywhere is to be protected, it's the closed area portion of the Ahi Canal. And, you know, DOFA left open the Ahi Cove, and they have a small visitor center and a parking lot and stuff to try to facilitate public use. But it is probably one of the best protected marine areas in the state.
I just see there's so much degradation on the coral that I didn't see in, like, say, 25, 30 years ago, what I see now.
Well, given its protected status, that would be, Ahi Cove would be a good place for these techniques to do this. We have started a partnership with Maui Ocean Center where they're using the same techniques we do in a smaller nursery to start growing corals, and that might be a good project.
Yeah.
Is this the end of the...
Yes, sir, I'm sorry, yeah.
A lot of the images in there were just awesome to me. Would it be possible for the board to have access to that PowerPoint?
Yeah.
Send it to Darlene. I'll give her the flash drive right now.
Yay! We want to use it. It's just exciting and positive, and it's the kind of thing that...
It's a big success.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. It's Hawaii-based solutions for Hawaii problems.
And open invitation to the board to come visit.
Appreciate it. I will. Thank you.
Okay. And that's complete. We've gone so far away from what we're asking for.
Sure.
But we wanted to share with you what exactly we're doing and what we're doing with the funds that we're getting from DOT.
Well, when you were telling me about coral and how you were growing a coral, yeah, that's what brought my mind was Ahi Canal.
No, there's
potential application.
Olawalu is another place that needs it, by the way.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, any more questions?
Move to approve.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You got a card?
Do I have a card?
Yeah.
Yes.
Back to the...
No, but I'll go upstairs and grab one.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah.
Better hurry.
I'm going to go run up right now and grab one.
D1, grant of non-exclusive easement for access purposes, and cancel an existing RP. on a paper.
What we get?
Only get a few.
Only get one, two, four, and five.
Yeah. Take them all.
Yeah, okay.
If you got any questions?
Two. Surfing right of entry. Four is explosive right of entry.
Yeah. You have the surfing one.
Now easement, city and county.
Anybody have questions on D1, 2, 4, and 5?
Move to approve as per staff recommendations. D1, 2,
second.
3, and 5.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. E. No, engineering draft. Same thing.
Hey, good morning. Allison Yim for the engineering division. Items L1, 2, 3, and 4 are for the appointment of Soil and Water Conservation Districts in Maui.
All in Maui.
I have a correction or an amendment to item L1 because the district sent me a revised appointment notice. And Yarrow Flower will fulfill the unexpired term of Dan Clegg, expiring June 30, 2020. That's the change. And no other changes to the other items.
Yarrow Flower.
I didn't know who she was, but I checked with staff over there because I knew Dan, and so they said she's great. So.
Okay. Any more questions? If not,
move to approve.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is that it?
Yep. Motion to.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Richard.
Not bad. 10:45.
Not bad.
You broke
Thank
the promise.
Thank you for your time. Still getting lunch, huh?
True. We just need a study.
Yeah,
she
just, yeah.
This morning was when I called, I got off the plane. 4 minutes. Depends what they say. No, so today I'm going to try a little something different. Today I'm going to try to have them come all over.
What you got for us?
I got some brochures.
You know, I think I'm going to be okay.
No, thank you, Dave.
That explain all about basically a quick overview of what I talked
okay,
about.
Good, thank you.
Did you guys report on this at the Hawaii Conservation Conference?
Last year. Now, this year, we set up a booth with some Line Corps.
Yeah. Oh, that's right, that's right. It would be neat to give a presentation, because that's very inspiring stuff.
Yeah, and especially, I didn't go into some of the other things. That's why I come down and show you, but we're the only facility in the world right now that daily has little coral babies, has little coral larvae.
Gotcha.
Most places in the world, you can only get it once or twice a year, but
right.
With daily? One of the native species, we're getting them daily.
Wow. Do you induce them, or what do you do?
No, there's the lace coral, Passiflora damacornis,
yeah.
And then there's a Leptaster. It's a flat coral. They both release asexual larvae. So we have a whole program where we're trying to use those to quickly grow large colonies the same way that we're doing with the microfragment.
Cool.
The other brochure I handed you is the tool that I was telling you about that we were using for figuring out lost.
Meeting adjourned at 10:45.
I don't know. We kept it quiet for 2 years because there's a lot of researchers that want access to it.
Oh, I see.
And we're really concerned about getting it out of the harbor and into natural environments. So,
yeah.
We've allowed a couple researchers to work on it at our facility.
Mm-hmm.
We allowed one researcher to take it to Kualo, but I've been trying to say that's really not a good idea because all these guys have open systems.
Yeah.
We had him keep it in a closed system. It's too easy for a mistake to be made for it to get out. Honestly, I think, you know, that's right near Snug Harbor. It's also near where they do a lot of the dry dock, or did a lot of the dry dock work. It could have come in on a barge. It could have come in on a mooring. It could have come on a research ship.
No genetic work to compare it to other
Yes,
species.
But I'm sorry. Can I do one more quick thing?
What?
Oh, how did I get? Can you pull up that? I actually can show you.
Let me just end this meeting real quick.
We actually, early on, I had Dr. Zach Forsman actually do some genetics on it. Because we had misidentified it. They had misidentified it. I noticed some natural history traits